Welcome to another episode of Whiskey and Widgets, the podcast that fuels your mind and your spirit. And today, we're blending deep conversations with a dash of liquid courage. Remember, life is short, but the universe is vast. So let's explore it together, one sip and one idea at a time. I'm your co-host, Chris.
And I'm your co-host, James. Thank you again for joining us on our Whiskey and Widgets journey, where we explore topics that we think matter and widgets we're passionate about, all over a little bit of liquor. What are you drinking today, Chris? Well,
I am drinking Woodinville, and just because I have a full bottle and I haven't really drank it. I think I opened it once, and so I figured, hey, it was looking at me and says, hey, come drink me. So it's Woodinville. It is a straight bourbon whiskey finished in port cask. And it's special limited release. So it's really good. It's smooth. It's my go-to. And Woodinville is local where I'm at. So how about you, James? What are you drinking?
Awesome. Is Woodinville what you had the last time we recorded?
Indeed. Yeah. Yes, it was the last time I had.
It's been a little while since we did a recording. So apologies to any of our listeners that have been wondering where our episodes have been. Sometimes life happens and we just do this for fun. Hopefully you guys are all still enjoying your whiskey journey. What I'd be curious to know, Chris, about the Woodinville is whether or not you perceive any difference in your taste now than you did the last time you had it because of that conversation, that idea around when you drink a whiskey, the time of day for when you have it or what you've eaten that day or like even like atmosphere and how much it might change your perception. It'd be a fun thing to consider. So like if you can give your thoughts, then we can look back and maybe check that out.
I agree. It's the ambiance, you know, the time of day, maybe what you just ate, like you had mentioned. And I will say from the last time I drank this, I loved it. Smooth, buttery, it doesn't burn. This time around, however, unfortunately, it feels a little too warm down my throat. Mm-hmm. Maybe because I ate Takis. Anyone heard of Takis?
No. What is
super spicy?
What is Takis?
So Takis is like something that I guess this is kind of like a younger generation of like Flaming Hot Cheetos.
Okay.
But it's like very thin sliced or thin chips and it's just covered in red spice. And it's good. And I shouldn't have eaten it. You know, and then of course drinking this and it feels like it's a little spicy in my mouth. It's kind of bringing that back up, but you know, I don't know if you want to try. I don't know if you like spicy chips.
I love spicy things. So I'll definitely have to go find it at a grocery store or something so I can try it. But
Takis, T-A-K-I is the name, Takis. So give it a shot. Let me know what you think about it.
I had... So this week I'm going to be drinking Jefferson's Ocean Aged at Sea, the rye double barrel that they released. Their double barrel rye is something that I've had outside of at home. This is the first bottle I've ever bought at my house for it. And actually, it was one of the things that came up from our conversation from one of our guests that was on the podcast previously. So wanted to lean into it and try it again. To me, previously, I've always kind of thought that Jefferson's Ocean Aged at Sea was kind of more of a marketing gimmick than like a quality, like product that would be desired. But I wanted to give it another review. This last weekend, I had some guests over, and we talked a lot about whiskeys and various things.
Yeah.
One of the things that we talked about was like, what do you taste, and how much of it is real, and like, what do you experience when you're tasting it? Some of that like notes and association conversation is fun. It's the same conversation around like wine, right? Like, do you taste the black raspberries that were grown on the northern peaks of the mountain with slight sun facing, you know, eastern sun or whatever it might be? Like the detail that people get into on like what they're associating can be pretty intense and intimidating if you're not, you know, pretending to be some sort of a connoisseur. So if you're new listening to the podcast, just a PSA, Chris and I are just dudes on a journey to enjoy life more. And it's, you know, it's just like is well said on the internet. The best way to drink your whiskey is the way you enjoy it. Right.
I agree 100%. You know, I'm not a writer. I'm not a professional whiskey connoisseur / blogger. And I'll just tell you if I like it or not. Like you said, James, you know, you enjoy it however you like it.
You ever,
and no one can change that.
You ever, when you're drinking a whiskey, Chris, have like a word pop in your head of like what it tastes like. But then when you, as you're about to say that word, you're like, but that's not at all what that is. But it like, it feels like it.
Yeah, that is true. Now, you know, English is not my first language. So sometimes I am, maybe you could be, or in others too, that maybe English is not their first language and it's their second language, where they don't have enough vocabulary to explain what they're trying to, you know, say. And I think we've talked about this in the previous podcast, where certain languages has a better structure of explaining your feelings than English. And sometimes there's things that I want to explain with whiskey that I can certainly explain it from a different language, but it's hard to put that sentence together to make it make sense.
So I don't have a great excuse like you do of like second language. From my perspective, sometimes it's just hard to articulate what you're tasting. And this is true about any sense, right? Most of what we do, the way we describe things and apply words, is comes from experience. And absent that experience, you liken it to another experience, which is why oftentimes somebody's going to be like, that tastes like chicken. Well, it doesn't really taste like chicken, but it might be the only poultry you can compare it to, right? You just haven't experienced more. Once you've had, you know, you've had duck, you've had chicken, and then you've had turkey, congrats, you've now had three whole different poultries. Well, you no longer have to say they both taste like chicken. You can say that there's qualities of each of them that you can start to break apart. It's the same with the whiskey journey. And this is there's a lot to say in order to cover a very simple idea. But for the Jefferson's Ocean Aged Double Barrel Rye Whiskey, when I drink it, the very first thing that I think of is it tastes malty. And that's the word that pops in my head. That's not an accurate thing to helpfully describe it. But if I think on it a little bit more as we're talking here, what I'm really trying to say is there's a sourness, but it's not just the character of taste that is sour. There's like a flavor component that makes me think malt. Well, but how do you describe what that is? It's probably some chemical, but, and I don't know what that, or compound, right? I don't mean chemical as in like, whenever people say chemical, if you notice this, Chris, there's this tendency for someone to think it's artificial. Well, like everything we drink is a compound, which therefore is like a chemical, right? So fun world.
No, I think you have a great point, because when you think of sour, but you don't want to use the word sour, because other people's definition or understanding of sour is based upon the experience that they went through. Like sour apple may be different from a sour candy.
Yeah. Well, someone might think
very different.
You might say sour and they think warheads.
Exactly.
Okay. Right? Different sort of sour.
And you can taste that in your mouth.
And what's unfortunate about language is when we talk about malt, that's just a term in whiskey. So like misusing terms can just confuse people, right? So a malt whiskey, that's effectively going to specify that you've got a fermented mash bill. We talk about the mash bill on the podcast every once in a while, but like, bourbons tend to be heavy corn mash bill as an example. I really like rye as a high flavor, high component of the mash bill. Well, a malted barley, you know, is basically just a fermented mash. That's what the malt is. And so when we talk about a single malt or a malt whiskey, then we're just talking about, you know, the specific requirements around, you know, your pot still and how you're fermenting the mash. So a lot of things, we set all of them aside. To me, I think this is actually a pretty smooth and good whiskey. Last time I had it, I actually didn't enjoy it that much. Today, I've had a lot of water and a lot of tea, and that's all I've consumed today. So I've got a pretty empty palate. And
oh yeah, so your taste buds is clean at that point, right?
Yeah.
So
and actually, when I put it in the dram and I let it like air for a little bit, it settles. It's got a very nice, approachable smell.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Did you ever figure out what you were drinking that one day
on your mystery day?
The mystery day?
No idea. I have no idea.
Oh, man.
I'm pretty sure that someone decanted a few different spirits into it. So it was a mixed bottle.
Oh, this is blended.
I think it was
blended whiskey.
I think it was blended. So I had a couple of friends that we were talking about an infinity bottle of whiskey. And and one of my bottles is just labeled whiskey. And that's typically where I'll do, and I alternate because I have a bottle that's my, I have a decanter that is used for scotch and I have a decanter that's for whiskey. And the whiskey one is typically either an American blend whiskey or I use it for a what I refer to as my house rye. And oftentimes my house rye is going to be like a Rittenhouse bottle and bond as an example.
Gotcha. But gotcha.
It didn't have the character of any of the whiskeys I would normally put in it. So I'm pretty sure one of my eager friends was trolling me and they turned it into an infinity bottle and added a different whiskey to it.
That is interesting. And speaking about whiskey, the last episode that we recorded, you were in a dilemma about Blanton's. The question is for those who are listening or listen to the last episode, I'm sure people are going to be asking, did you end up purchasing the case of Blanton's?
So I did, but I didn't end up getting the full case. I didn't get all of them. They had another option where I could just get a few bottles instead of all of the bottles. So I did get the Blanton's original single barrel because, of course. And then I got, what did I get? Did I get the green or the gold label?
I think you mentioned green.
I think I got the green label with it so that I could compare the two.
Very cool.
So, but it's really interesting. The place that I was looking at that had that, very exciting to be able to move forward with that.
So have you received it? You haven't received it.
I haven't received it yet. And I don't think that's because they're not going to send it. But I haven't received it yet. So since we recorded, gotcha. I didn't order it right that day. And that's also probably part of my problem.
So hopefully on our next recording that it arrives and you can share, you know, did you enjoy it? Because I think in the last episode, we kind of did a deep dive of, you know, is your time and value, I think. How do you value time and enjoyment? So, no, that's good. I'm looking forward to hearing from that, James, and hearing your feedback on Blanton's. Because Blanton's, I've never bought a bottle for Blanton's. I've only ordered it at a restaurant. So,
and that's,
you know,
that's fair. It's, I think it's worth it, right? Like it's a fun experience to be able to have a bottle or two of a more expensive whiskey. The thing is, you really have to enjoy a thing to spend that much money on it, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The more I explore these whiskeys, even just to make it so I can better articulate what I do and don't enjoy about it, I think it's worth it. Another important piece to it is there's a component to Blanton's that I really appreciate. So we were just talking about mash bill. Their mash bill that they use is also a high corn mash bill because it's a bourbon, but they add extra rye to their mash bill. And I really enjoy rye in my mash bill. So it's part of why I've enjoyed it anytime I've gotten it while I'm out. So yeah, we'll see. We'll definitely do an experiment around it.
That I'm excited to hear from that. And you're talking about heading out. And did you do anything? Did you do more things outside of your home this summer? Because I know summer is ending. And I'll share a little bit of where, you know, we did a lot of stuff outside of home this summer. I think I've shared in previous podcast episodes where I've been going to wineries and stuff like that. And I just got back from another winery. I'm enjoying that kind of life now where like maybe your palate changed. Of course, I'm still drinking whiskey, but just discovering the wine side of things too. And what's interesting is that when we came back from this weekend, and we were eastern side of Washington, so very warm, it's still 90s, and you go back to the other side of the mountain, the weather changed. And so for me, it was surreal that we finally turned on our pellet stove to warm up the house for the first time. And that's typically a sign of like, hey, fall's coming, it's getting cold. And one thing I realized when I was turning on my pellet stove, wood pellet to warm up the house, that I didn't really do a lot of cooking. And so I'm a little sad. So I'm curious, James, did you do more cooking this year? Did you do more smoking food? Because it's smoking food in this episode has been a staple in our podcast. I feel like we haven't spoken a lot about that, but you know,
Chris,
I'm curious, man. Did you do that? Did you do more of it or less?
Confession: I think I also did less. Which it's weird because like, a lot of what I've spent time doing, so I've smoked a few things, but my projects have shifted. So what I mean by that for anyone listening, I do meat projects where I'll make a large batch of meat that I can manipulate in different ways for different dishes. So as an example, I did a very large cut of brisket, and that brisket, that's 17 pounds of meat. It's myself and my wife. Takes a long time to go through 17 pounds of meat. But I did a salt and pepper smoke where I just kept it very flavor neutral, and I portioned out some of it for different use cases. And so I put that brisket on risotto. I put that brisket on pizza. I put Ooh. That brisket. I made three different types of pizza. We did a Neapolitan style pizza on the grill. We did a what is probably my favorite style of pizza at this moment. Shout out to, I can't pronounce his last name, Ethan Chbosky on YouTube, for his Detroit style pizza crust, because brisket on a Detroit style pizza is like delightful. It's wonderful. I actually intend to do that with a pulled pork at some point here, because I feel like the grease going into the crust would be just perfect.
Oh, but, it's making me hungry.
So yeah, like when I'm looking at these different makes, you can take that salt and pepper brisket and you can go full barbecue, but I can also shift it to tacos, and I can also shift, like we did so many different things with it. Here's the downside to that though. I smoked it once. For like a month, that's what I'm eating in different ways.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a big family. And if I'm not doing like a celebration, it's harder. So this winter, I'm going to have a lot of out of town family, and I'm going to have a lot of guests, and I'm going to have like New Year's celebrations. So I'm going to get to smoke a lot of different things and then feed people. And then like we use it. So I'll get to do a lot more of that space. I actually have a section of brisket and a pork butt in my fridge right now that are dry brining that I'm probably, when we're done with this recording, I'm going to go smoke. So,
so you did less. I did too, man. So I'm a little sad about that because that's one thing I enjoy a lot, but we also had a lot of things. I mean, summer was crazy for us too, but you know, on the last thing that I smoked was a, meat candy. We call it meat candy. Basically it's just pork belly in cubes, and you know, you cook it until it hits like 205, and then it just kind of falls apart and super sweet with honey and brown sugar. And I took that, like you said, you know, sometimes you make a lot. And now, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, my kids enjoy it too. And so it gets in right away. And so this time around, we had a little bit of leftover, and I took some of that meat candy, chopped it up, and created or cooked fried rice. And it was so good. And so, you know, I was just curious, man, like this summer, did you do, sounds like you didn't, you're just like me.
I didn't
do much smoking food.
I didn't get to do as many things like that. I did experiment a fair bit in the kitchen this year. I actually burnt myself in the kitchen really bad because we did a fried food night that I thought was going to be awesome. And it was awesome. And effectively we did wok fried food. So I used my wok as a deep fryer for us to fry up a bunch of different things. And if we needed to, we'd just swap out the oil. Well, one of the things we wanted to do, I wanted like real high oil temperature. And so we used peanut oil for it. So it got real, real hot. And without putting anything in it, it was hot enough that it, between batches. So there was something in it, but like we weren't actually actively putting anything in. It spurted oil out of the wok and it landed on my sock. Because I was wearing just socks. It turns out when socks have part plastic in it, it just melts to your skin.
Oh,
so it was real
God.
Bad. Warning for apologies for anyone that I just like gave horrible visuals to. But yeah, that was rough. That was the last like big project we did. But I did a number of like cooking projects this year where we did some really neat things. Where I have a couple of friends that would come over, and we attempted to reproduce food that was created in anime. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's a fun project. That's definitely a fun project. Did you do like anything specific you can share, like besides ramen?
Yeah,
because right? That's
so
typically like
one
common.
Of the dishes. I'm going to struggle to remember what it was called, but it was effectively like an Asian version of a turducken. Where like
interesting.
You create the fried rice and you wrap it in lettuce and then you shove it in the chicken and you're doing like little Cornish hens or chickens and then you cook those. Yeah, it's a whole thing, but it was a lot of fun.
Have you done anything where like, you know, there's a short burst of videos now, like TikTok, YouTube shorts, Instagram reels, by the way, Instagram reels. Speaking about Instagram, if you're interested in what James and I are drinking, we try to post these photos. Follow us on Instagram, Whiskey and Widgets. So regarding those short videos and reels, I've come across a lot of people that are sharing ideas of making things. And have you found anything online through short videos like, hey, you know what? I should try that. That looks good. It looks amazing. Have you done any of that, James, this past summer?
There have been a few things where I've seen somebody post on Instagram or on YouTube. And I've been like, I'm gonna try that. There's been a number of like spritz drinks that I've tried. Apologies to anyone who's like disappointed and now find out that I'm doing drinks that I didn't post in the Instagram. But I do actually have a few that I made recently that I'll probably have to upload today. The things that I try to post in there are either what we're doing on the podcast or unique drinks at like a restaurant when I want to call it like, hey, they're doing something cool here at this bar or pub or whatever it is, or something that we've invented. Speaking of which, Chris, I'd love to get back to that with you and Brad, where we do like a cocktail night where we pre-plan to make the same cocktail. We talked about getting together and then doing some cocktails together so we could record those results and then try it. But looks like that for all of our listeners that are, you can mourn with us. Life happened in the last month, so we weren't able to get together for that. The celebrations of new life. Well, cheers. So a toast to Brad, who's not cheers. Here with us. Congratulations, bud, on the things that have happened in your world. And for everyone else that doesn't know, that's fine. Don't worry about it. But celebrate life with us and carry on with, you know, whatever you want to experience. So this year we didn't get to get together, but I expect we will.
But.
And we'll still see each other at a conference soon.
Oh, we will. And this time, I think I shared this story in one of our podcast episodes where the last time we were together during conference season, because we spoke about this, right? There's conference season. There's two big conference seasons, right? Like spring and fall. And the last time, I didn't drink much.
Yeah.
And I was in a weird funk. But this time, I'm going to be ready, my friend.
Dude, so I am so ready for this.
I'm down. I'm so down because this one's going to be a big one. And unfortunately, we can't share with our listeners here because that's professional stuff. But we will share our experiences of the drinks that we're trying and the fun stories that we're going to create on those things. So, James, toast to that, my friend. We do need to get that done, even if it's just you and I, and I'm okay with that. So cheers, cheers.
Cheers, cheers.
I'm going to take a sip. Now, a quick shift really quick. So have you purchased anything where you're only using it one time? And some of those purchases may be like $10, maybe $40, maybe $100 or so. Have you done that before?
Where I buy a thing that I know is single use or buy a thing that I think is multi-use and only end up using it once?
Both. Either scenario. Either scenario.
I mean, there's a lot of single use things that we buy. So like if you garbage bags are single use, right? They're consumables, right? But I think you're probably referencing like
buying a tech. Let's say you bought a tech and I'm like, I'm probably going to use this one time, maybe once a year.
Yeah. So the first thing that comes to mind for me on this isn't actually a tech that I bought, but is like a perfect example of it. And that's the VR headset that I have, my Oculus Quest 2. I don't use it very often. And then I got the Oculus Quest 2 for free, but then I naturally had to go buy like games for it so I could use it and an app so that I could like stream my computer from it. And I was like, this is so cool. And it is cool, but I don't use it every day. Like I could decide to put that on my head and then do my work from it because it has a speaker and a microphone and like I can actually like connect to my desktop or laptop if I want to. But I don't. It's one of those things where the technology just didn't apply in a way where I ended up actually adopting it in a functional way. Probably the last thing I bought that I just don't use very often is probably my iPad actually. A lot of people use the heck out of their iPads.
That's expensive.
I used my iPad the most and still do when I'm traveling to like client sites and when I'm consulting and stuff, because I can transparently use it as a note-taking device and it's a little bit less intrusive than like having a laptop in front of me, right? One of the problems that I find with a laptop in a conference scenario is the act of the screen coming up between you creates a barrier between you and the people you're in the room with. It's a weird, subtle thing. And so some people early in my tech career were like, hey, you got to just, you can use a laptop, but take notes by hand because it shows that you're engaged with them. I disagree with that. I think you should use technology for your notes. What I think the problem is actually you're placing a wall between you. It's a small wall, but it's still a wall.
Yeah, you know, that is an interesting take. And it's going back to my question about buying stuff. And I did end up doing that. I'm probably going to use it one time, maybe once a year. But that is a big shift of an iPad to a laptop. But mine's not that quite expensive.
What's yours?
And I'm sure you use it. I ended up buying a presentation clicker.
Oh, yeah. I have one of those too.
Right?
And you only use it when you do a presentation. Yeah.
Yeah. But everything's remote. And so you do maybe you do a speaking session or a teaching a class or presenting something.
Did you get a good one? Does it have a laser pointer on it?
It does have a laser pointer in it.
You're going to use it more. You can use it with your dogs.
Oh, there you go. So I could use it with that to get them entertained.
Just don't accidentally shoot it in their eyes.
Yes, please don't. The PSA. Don't do that. But I have a feeling that I need it. Well, do I need it though, or can I just stand behind a podium? See, that's not a good presenter, right? Like you have to be walking around.
Yeah.
Right. But you end up using it one time and it'll sit there. Hopefully you don't lose it until next year, maybe. And, so I guess that's our widget for the week, an iPad for note taking, whether you're into that kind of stuff, like that's an expensive note taking tool, but I'm sure you use it for other things, James.
Yeah. I definitely use it for other things. I use my iPad for a lot of little details, but it's not my go-to. Like if I'm at home and I'm at my desk, I'm going to be on my laptop. Mm-hmm. So most of why I like an iPad is for the mobility of it. There's use cases, just not as many as I would have expected. And part of that's like how your life changes, right? Here's a fun app that I'm sure a lot of our listeners even have or some variant of, but you probably don't actually use it every day. And I'm sure some people are going to be like, oh my gosh, I use it all the time. Great. I'm happy for you. But I have a Ring camera system. I was getting so many stinking notifications for every time a car drove by, I changed the notifications so I wouldn't get as much. At this point, I only use it when somebody rings the doorbell.
But you can do zones still, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Activity zones.
I changed the activity zones, so I only have activity zones when somebody's like coming towards my house, not on the street.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, by the time the Ring notification comes off, they're walking up and ringing the doorbell anyways. So
it's a little delayed.
So like I'll get the notification as the doorbell's ringing. And so I'm looking at it and I'm like, I never log into this app. The doorbell just rang. I'm just going to go answer it. They're 10 feet away.
James, maybe you need to get a Nest Cam instead because they do instant. I did notice that because I have Blink. Blink is another camera system that's owned by Amazon, similar to Ring. And I have both. And Blink is inexpensive, super cheap cameras. And Nests are very expensive cameras. And there's a difference where my Blink camera has a little bit of delay and you can only record maybe like, you can choose, you can do 60 seconds of recording in any time that it captures or identifies movement. But my Nest immediately notifies me live that, hey, this is what's happening, and records it. And I've never used Ring, so I don't know the experience in that. But again, it's like cheap, expensive, but there's pros and cons, and it they sort of do the same thing, but one is a little bit better. Yeah, it depends, man. I guess it depends of what kind of experience you're looking for, looking to do. But going back
to, but you have both active at the same time right now.
I do have both active at the same time. And the reason why I have Blink, because I needed something that is wireless and battery operated in certain areas. And I cannot fathom purchasing a Nest camera that averages about $200 plus per camera for areas that are low traffic. Whereas I can buy Blink cameras that goes on sale that you can get $30 per camera, up to $100 per camera. So you see the big difference. And so I put those much inexpensive cameras in areas that are less foot traffic, less notification. But I know that I still need to have cameras on that side in case, you know, there's movement or whatever that needs to capture. And I take the Nest cameras in areas that I know that I need that has a lot of high traffic, because I need that instant notification. And I found that Nest seems to be the better product that notifies me immediately. So that's also including their Nest doorbell.
I have started to regret mixing certain ecosystems. So I'm ready at this point, as I proceed to explore new widgets in the IoT space, to just, if I pick a solution, I'm going to commit to that one solution. Long time ago, probably season one, we talked about the fact that I use Lutron Casetta in my house. So smart light switches rather than smart light bulbs. For my outlets that I have lamps on, I use a different product. There exists an option from Lutron that's in the same ecosystem, but I didn't buy those because the option I bought was like $5 an outlet. And the option from Lutron,
which one is it?
Is like $65 an outlet, which is a lot of
which
money.
Which one did you get?
The $5 per outlet option that I did is through an app called GoSund.
Oh, that's new.
Here's the weird thing though. They advertise the hell out of me in the app. Like there's constantly ads and there's constantly like push notifications from GoSund telling me that I can buy more things from GoSund. And I'm just like, I paid for your hardware. I don't need you to advertise to me. I don't want to buy more of your thing. If I did, I'd buy it where I bought the first thing. And you can't disable those. You can disable all the notifications or none of them, but like, it's just there. Frustrates the hell out of me.
We talked about that on, I think it was first season, about smart lights and smart switches. And I remember that was a smart thing to do rather than bulbs, about just switches. And I did. I ended up replacing a majority of the switches, including my office right now. It's running off a smart switch. And the smart switch product that I purchased is from a company called Casa. And I think Casa's owned... Casa. Yeah, Casa's own. I don't know who owns Casa, but it worked well with Google Assistant. Now, I use Google Assistant majority of my smart switches, and that's another thing too. They talked about ecosystem where Nest works perfectly with my Google Home. Right, that's a Google ecosystem that works with Google Assistant. In my Hue lights, if you're using Philips Hue light bulbs, and Casa works in there too, so I can just, you know, say the magic word of the Google and say, "Hey, turn on back door." Whereas my other camera, Blink, for example, does not work in the Google Assistant or Google ecosystem or Google Home. And so there is a workaround. You use the if, which is another
if this then that
widget that we talked about. Yep, we use that. We talked about that on our previous podcast, and you can get around by using that. But then now it's, you know, now I can't control it from my Google Home app. So it's almost like that weird balance of like I want some of this features here, but it doesn't work here. And
there's an
kind of sticking to that
from a lamp perspective. I'm starting to think that the bulbs, this is a weird transition in opinion, right? When we had this conversation, I insisted the bulbs were a bad idea because they're going to burn out. Mm-hmm. In hindsight right now, for a lamp, I actually think the bulbs might be better because there's a problem. If you're walking in a room and your phone isn't handy and you just want the light on, you can use a voice assistant to ask them to turn on the light. That relies on the voice assistant hearing you correctly. So like I'm walking through the room that I'm in, I have two lamps and an overhead light, and they're in different ecosystems. Yeah. So I can ask she who must not be named to turn on the light for me in that room. And I got to hope she turns the right light on or actually understands it. And I don't want to stand there and have a conversation repeating myself to get the light on because I need the light on because I'm walking through the room, right? I just want it on.
Yeah.
There's an option. There's a solve for this, by the way, for anyone that just wants to lean all the way into technology. My wife doesn't agree with me, so I will concede the point. We don't need to do this. Motion sensors are a really great way to make your lights turn on for you automatically. You don't have to say anything. You just walk in the room. It turns them on for you. You don't have to have them turn off afterwards. You can have them turn off based off of timers and other activity sensors. But I digress.
Pros and cons?
Those actually aren't all that expensive. But I digress. The important piece is if you want to turn on a lamp and it's an outlet plug-in, you can't pull the chain on the lamp. You have to do it in the app. You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
So you can't just walk up to the lamp and pull the chain. So if you have a guest in your house that doesn't know that, they're turning your lamp off and now you can't turn it on because the chain got pulled. So this is where maybe the bulbs are a better idea. Although I think the bulbs have the same problem, right? If you pull the chain, the bulb can't turn, it doesn't have power, so it can't turn on or off, right?
Exactly. And I think where I struggle a little bit on that, and some of the light bulbs you purchase needs the hub. Which is also good because then you don't have to worry about IP addresses. Whereas if you buy some light bulbs have their own IP addresses, which takes up space to your IP on your Wi-Fi. And so you kind of have that weird balance. And I do like my Google Home because in my office, for example, I call this study. And before I come in, I'll just say, hey, you know, my friend Google, turn on study. It'll turn on my lamp and my big light. But I can also say, turn on my study lamp, and it'll just turn on my lamp. So I can't do that with other products that I'm aware of, unless it's like, hey, Google Assistant, Google Home certified.
So,
you know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
With Gosend, being fair to them, I opened the app while we're talking. They didn't throw a bunch of ads at me. Great. Love it. Thanks for not doing that. it does integrate into Alexa and it handles scenes. So for anyone not heavily in the know on IoT, a scene is a generic way of saying that you're going to have scheduled tasks. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more broader than just tasks, but you can create a scene with like sequences of events, or specific actions or specific scenarios. Scheduled. A fun thing that you can go like check on YouTube is like go check some YouTube shorts of like intruder alarm IoT, right? Intruder alert. And you'll see the different things people have done. It's been quite creative. Like it's a lot of fun. Most of this is not life necessity. It's just fun hobby, right?
Yeah.
But, I think the fact that it's not the same app to control all of the lights is actually annoying. So then you start thinking about like, well, okay, should I use just an app to control my apps? Is it integrated in that ecosystem? Should I just use the Alexa app and control everything from there. Pardon my stutter there. I was pausing to contemplate whether or not she's turned on in my office.
She say it.
She is off right now because I didn't turn her back on after work.
But doesn't it? It's a struggle as a consumer of finding that standard, because there are products out there that just does exactly what you need it for, but it's not can't be part of an ecosystem where the term analysis paralysis, where there's so much information, I don't know what to do at this point. And I struggle considering someone that's been in IT, and James, you're in IT, you're trying all these different things, and we're struggling to find like which is the right one for me. And I have two camera system, right? Because one meets my requirement and the other one meets my other requirement. It's just hard to find both. And well, I could get the Nest cameras, but I am paying a lot of money for an area that I get no traffic.
Right.
No traffic.
Listen,
why would I pay a $300 camera?
I was just talking to somebody about the fact that they were really upset about that their Ring camera is not always recording. It'll give you like a few points in time, but if it didn't detect something, it doesn't keep recording. So if you have an incident in that space and it didn't detect that incident, maybe because you drew it out, right? Mm-hmm. So great case in point. We mentioned earlier today in this conversation that my camera, I drew the lines so that it's only going to detect things when it's within my property, not on the street. So that means if some sort of incident happens across the street from me, where my camera could have picked it up and then maybe been a benefit to my neighbor, it's not going to record it.
Yeah, because you get your zone, you change your zone.
I changed my zone. Now, if I wanted to be like really friendly for my neighbors and like make sure it's detecting everything, even stuff across the street, now it's recording all this stuff and I'm getting noise, which is exhausting. I don't want all that notification.
Yeah. You miss fun notifications. And, you know, of course, depending on your neighborhood, right? It's going to depend, because where I live, I don't see the street or anything like that. Now, if you live in the city, you may want to capture everything, which it really, I mean, it depends, man, like how you want to handle that. Which kind of leads me to my next thing I wanted to ask you, James. So capturing stuff with your camera, recently I was asked this past week or two, maybe a week and a half already, where it intrigues me. Someone had asked me, do you believe in aliens? Because people are capturing these videos now. And the, you know, of course, the department, the government is now declassifying some of these documents about, like, hey, they've been studying it for quite some time. And I don't know the details and in the intricacies behind that, but the question is, do you believe that there's another life forms out there outside of our solar system, or even within our solar system, we just can't detect it? And of course, with the James Webb Telescope, you know, sharing new images of other galaxies, it leads me to believe that I do believe that there's something out there. They just don't care about us.
Yeah.
And so, James, to you, I'm curious, man, what do you think?
Here's my thought. And it's personal James Nicholas opinion as of today. Might change in the future. I reserve the right to adjust opinions. But at the moment, I think that it's highly likely that there are other life forms within our universe. From balancing a science and spirituality perspective on this, I think that it is very reasonable to believe and to interpret. So I believe in the Christian faith. Judeo-Christian faith that's closely aligned to the Pentecostal denomination, for anybody that cares. I think it should dictate positively towards my engagements with other people and not negatively. That's what I think it should dictate. So there's a lot of negativity that exists in our culture, and I don't think your faith should be part of that. If you are in a space where your faith is part of negativity, that's a problem. And you should consider your faith and what it's teaching you or how you're living it. To that end, I think that there is truth, and I do believe that there's space in faith for there to be life outside of what exists on earth. Because at no point does it say God only created what we know. So that's my thought. What I think exists is I feel like either there's life forms that are not more advanced than us, and therefore they're somewhere on the advancing, the technological advancement journey, such that they can't find us, or they're more advanced than us to a degree by which they don't care about us. And there's an interesting potential that the universe is so large that even by the time we would get the technology such that we could go meet another life form, we may also then get to a place where we're no longer interested in doing such. So
yeah,
if you just consider our own advancement on technology, it's been really rapid over the last several hundred years. If we fast forward 1,000 years from now, what is our technology capable of? What are we capable of? At that time, socially, what are we interested in? Because technology and social interest do influence each other. Are we still interested in finding other life forms? Will there be a few individuals that are? Yeah, absolutely. Will they have the authority, power, capacity, and capability to execute meeting other life forms? Who knows, right? And so, like, I think those are important elements. So yeah, I feel like it's very probable that, not to go hella religion on our episode, it's very probable God created the heavens and the earth, and the heavens
he created
and
the earth, ones.
Like he could have, this is the
multiple versions.
This is humanity. There could be some planet somewhere that literally angels live on that planet. That could be a thing. Who knows? That could be not a thing.
Or we could be version 11, and then there's a version 12.
There could be a version 12
Earth somewhere else.
Yeah, there's so much I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's where...
So this, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really interesting, James, that a great perspective on your part, because, you know, I'm all about science, and I grew up in a religion household as well, both Catholic and Mormon. And so for me, the question becomes, is it going, when we're talking about the analysis paralysis that a lot of people are releasing, government slowly releasing these information. And so what happens is that people are going to be very getting used to that information. Ah, okay, well, another video. And what if it does happen? How do people react? And it's like, oh, okay, well, I've seen a video similar to that. Now I see it in person. The question becomes, how would that change beliefs in religion? Considering you and I coming from a religious family, I don't know if you're coming from a religious family. I sure have. But how does that change in your belief? Do people believe now it's like, oh, chaos, right, in the religion space?
There are definitely some religions that there would be chaos for them, right? Like, there are definitely some people that would immediately be like, okay, that alien's a hoax, we don't believe it. There would definitely be people that would say, sweet, that alien, they are the devil, right? Like, or whatever negative entity they might attribute it to. I think that my faith and understanding in God is large enough, and my recognition that God is larger than me is enough for me to understand and accept that there can exist aliens, and I didn't know about it, nor did I need to know about it until I then do become aware of it. So to that end, there'd be a lot of chaos.
Like, it'd be a lot Chris, of chaos. And
think about think about just like you mentioned your family and their religious background, like how specific people you know would respond to there's legitimately an alien life form. It's sentient. It's here for whatever reason. And like, think about that immediately when it happens. Like, first contact hasn't happened yet. Are they friendly? We don't know.
Right.
What are people doing? Right. Like,
yeah.
You know about the story about the War of the Worlds, which,
yep.
Which, fun fact for anyone listening, War of the Worlds was effectively like the first podcast type situation.
Yeah.
Like they weren't the first one. There were plenty of them, but like it's radio stories. That's all a podcast is. Yeah. It's the current evolution of a radio story.
Yes.
They aired War of the Worlds like a news reading broadcast that was actually happening, but it was played during a segment that was supposed to be a fictional story. And so it was a fictional story, but so many people tuned in and didn't know. And so they thought it was real.
And believed it.
And actually, this is what makes it fun to look at it too. If you look at the history in that, everything I just said is understood to be true by some people, but others say that actually is a hoax. Nobody thought it was real. And trying to understand the history of it can be quite a fun circle. So yeah, like if you think about just like aliens are real, that's pretty close to the War of the Worlds like premise. I don't know.
That's a good point. That's a good point because, you know, there'll be a kind of point where people are like, that's CG. It's not real.
Right.
But then like some people are like, that's real. It's happening right now.
Yeah.
And so you're getting lost to like understand, okay, what is real? You know, is this fake? Another fake one?
Yeah.
Because there's tools out there that makes it look so easy. Like people like myself and you and our listeners can go ahead and download a tool.
Chris,
you can create CGI stuff.
What if someone did a YouTube video that was a deep fake of like a first contact with an alien in a desert. And then they got a few other YouTubers to do like something that made it look like aliens landed and are infiltrating our society. And they went with like a scenario that's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, right? And then like I could see a scenario where like the deep fake element of that could like blow up and then you could have people posting fake content that like supports it. And you could just, it could be like a whole mess in society. And the crazy thing is it could also be real.
Exactly.
Like
exactly. And you can create hysteria. And so, here's what I will say. There's so many galaxies and you know out there, we're at least one in a trillion chance, and there's more than a trillion galaxies out there and planets, that there's a chance, whether they're either our level advanced or maybe they're like octopuses that you know they just can't build something, but they're as smart as an octopus, which we, you know, I find octopus being an alien. I think they're aliens, but
I mean, like, frankly,
that could be out there.
Who's to say that half the life forms on Earth were always on Earth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
There's some fun sci-fi space in there where, like, people have done those stories, and I think they're entertaining and they're good. Are they real? Or could they be real? There's so many people who take the very, very seriously the ideas that the pyramids were created by more advanced civilizations that came before us. And the line between more advanced Earth-based civilization and more advanced extraterrestrial civilization, it's a pretty thin line. And like, people cite the pyramids as like a really good example of this. Joe Rogan has it on his podcast on a regular basis where he's talking about how the pyramids are like such a ridiculous thing, feat of engineering, compared to what we can do even with our technology today. So it's just like did humanity get wiped out and reset at some point?
Right?
Were aliens here? Are we the first group of, you know, life forms that ever landed on Earth? Do we know?
Or maybe we were advanced. Maybe we were already advanced and it got wiped out.
And we just got reset. And
starting from scratch, it got reset. Yeah. Right? Like you just, you what look if, at the Sahara Desert and maybe there's an entire civilization underneath it. It just got buried.
Chris, what if Stargate is like tangentially almost right? What if humanity didn't start on Earth? We started somewhere else and we colonized Earth. Then we got reset. And then after the reset, we didn't remember. And so
exactly.
maybe and there's brethren possible. Elsewhere. Maybe Genesis happened on a planet called Genesis in a galaxy far, far away. And maybe Star Wars is real. Like
Right? It's so many possibilities. Here's another theory that I love. I had a conversation about somebody. Everybody has that deja vu feeling, right? And it's like, I've been here before. There's been a theory about people feeling deja vu is a connection between you and another universe.
Sure.
That is just like you. And you just happen to connect within the same, I don't know, not frequency.
You
align. The same like, length, wavelength.
Like you align overlapped.
At some point. You overlap the universe. It's like, hey, it felt like this happened before, but it's sort of different. Because they've already proving the fact that you can have one atom, I think it was like an atom, and another atom across another universe. And if one moves, the other one moves across distances of space and time.
Yeah, spooky
distance.
And
so they've already been proven that. Yeah, right? So why can't we be the same thing, right? Where humans are really complex creations of the universe. And that's a possibility, man. That could be a possibility about feeling the deja vu, like I've been here before.
I think what you're referring to
different place.
Is called it's Einstein's entanglement, right? Spooky action at a distance. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Why can't we? We could be those atoms, right?
I mean, yeah. I personally think that the theory of like your brain shut off and turned back on, like you had like a mini reboot, is like an approachable guesstimation as to what's happening there. There's some science there, but like, have I read the studies? No.
Yeah.
Random tangent. I'm really enjoying the Jefferson today. Didn't enjoy it as much last time I had it. It's been great this evening. It's encouraging our discussion in incredible ways.
Third dram.
Yeah. Dude, this dram just keeps disappearing. I don't know what's happening to it. Do you ever notice how many different whiskeys have very similar flavors, but they don't taste the same? It's part of the thing that makes me struggle with our conversation on like, how do you describe what you're tasting, right? Like I could say this
flavors
whiskey,
and tastes are two different things.
Well, yeah. So I could say that this whiskey is a sweeter whiskey with like some sour notes. Great. Sweet and sour. Love it. It's not sweet and sour sauce, but it's sweet and sour. Then I can talk about the flavor of how it's like caramely and maple. It's got like a little bit of a, like a wood oak. And then there's like an earthy note to it. How the hell do I describe it? I could describe it with the same words, a different whiskey. They're not going to taste the same. Yeah. Like language is so stinking flawed, Chris. If we can't even explain what we're drinking, how can we explain aliens?
You are 100% right. I had to look at the difference between flavors and taste. So for those who don't know, and I will read it to you if you're not going to Google it because you're driving. The terms taste and flavors are often confused. Taste refers to specifically to the five basic tastes that we perceive in your mouth. And basically, flavor is a combination of all the tastes. So
yeah,
the more you know.
Well, and importantly, you've got your taste, your flavor, and like all of the individual notes that you pull out of anything you're consuming, most of that's coming from aromatics. It's actually your sense of smell.
Yeah.
And so you can pick things up and distinguish it with your tongue and your sense of smell together. And you get nuance, but like so much of it is individual element. Chris, have I ever talked to you about vanilla?
Yes.
So,
but for those who have first-time listeners, tell us a little about
vanilla extract. You're taking the flavor elements out of a vanilla using a neutral spirit, typically like a vodka. And the difference between a vanilla extract from Mexico or Madagascar or wherever is actually the plant. The plant is different, and it has some number of compounds in it that are the same between each of the vanilla beans. And then each of the beans from each of the areas have other compounds that are also present that are different. And those different compounds give you a different experience between those different beans. But they're all vanilla beans, and they all taste like vanilla, but some of them are subtly different. That's a level of thing where we just don't have good enough language unless you start digging into like science and you're like naming the compound as what you're tasting. Maybe that's what society will evolve to. Chris, you think we're going to get to a place where like in 1,000 years, when we talk about how much we love that cheeseburger, we're going to be like, oh man, I just really love that compound A7B2000G. Oh, it's so good.
Oh, there'd be the breakdown, man. Like, right, I tell
like,
you.
You're going to start being like, my preferred amino acid is blank.
You know, I enjoy this conversation, James, and I would love to do more deep dive on the scientific component, because I enjoy that too as much, especially when we start drinking a little bit here. So, but I appreciate the incredible journey we've taken today.
I have a question for you before we close. This is important.
Yes.
If aliens exist, what's their favorite liquor?
So now you're going to get me into this. So someone discovered recently, I read somewhere, someone discovered thousands of year old wine. So I think their favorite's going to be wine. Maybe they've drank wine before.
All right.
I don't know.
All right. Is their wine made of grapes?
Certainly not beer.
Is there wine made from grapes? Or is there wine made from something like figs or like some other fruit?
Oh, it's got to be something else, man. Well, it's got to be something else, because I feel like grapes hasn't been around for that long. But it could be liquor. It could be whiskey, man, because you can turn anything into a whiskey.
Yeah. Honey wine, man. Possibly. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know, dude. It's, you know, our world is super fascinating. It's so fascinating because we don't know. We can make an assumption based on carbon dating, but even carbon dating has flaws. And I don't know, man. I wish I knew the answer. Those are very cool questions to ask that there's been no evidence of, like, what's anything beyond the last 2,000 years. And we've been around for billions.
Well, like, there are so many plants on Earth that I look at.
How many times we've resetted, James?
Yeah.
How many times we've been reset, okay?
Right.
Is it every 1,000 years we need to reset?
I mean, are we in a simulation right now, Chris?
Right?
Like,
maybe.
Who knows? Maybe. Who knows? Does it matter if we're in a simulation as long as we're enjoying it?
It doesn't matter as long as I'm enjoying it.
See, that's like tying us back to, you know, VR and Oculus and AI. Like, if you were just like on a hospital bed for the rest of your natural life, but like from a virtual reality perspective, thought that you weren't, said, okay, plug into the matrix. What if you can experience something better while you're in the matrix than out of the matrix?
Possibly, man. Cause you know, you get to a point. Yeah, you could totally rabbit hole. Because you can have AI do all the work for you, and you could just be at home and like, hey, I'm going to be having a different life. And remember Ready Player One, great movie. And that'd be a good starting point.
Right. You know? I mean, like,
are we far from
their
that?
World,
we're not that very far.
Their world outside of the game was kind of rough. Like, it's a whole new definition of slums.
Yeah, dude. But you could choose. Maybe that's what you chose. Maybe you entered that in your machine. I was like, this is the lifestyle I want. I'm going to see if I can survive it. And maybe that's what I chose.
Right.
Right. My real version of myself. Maybe that's the choice that I made. So, you know what? Chris is going to be this. And I want to make sure I'll see how far I can survive.
Yeah. And the only reason that you had any kind of difficulty in life is you screwed up and you didn't buy the insurance package.
Exactly.
Right. Like,
right. Maybe
you could have gotten so platinum. You win gold. You didn't get that in life. You didn't choose platinum.
You paid for the right package, you know, and just like,
Chris, what if
you don't know, man?
What if we're all just NPCs?
Right. I don't know, man. This is like, it's so AI crazy.
Already exists. This crazy whole podcast world is a deep fake. James Nicholas doesn't exist. Not a real person.
So with that, James, you know, I enjoy the captivating subject of aliens and ET life, from the possibilities of weird life forms like octopuses and distant planets, you know, implications of interstellar contact. This episode had everything. I hope you've enjoyed this ride, galactic ride,
yeah,
as much as we have. And if you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to Whiskey and Widgets on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss a fun episode like this where we just talk about random nonsense. And if you're feeling generous, consider leaving us a review to help us reach even more listeners who love to blend intellectual conversations with a touch of good whiskey. Until next time, pour yourself another glass, keep your eyes to the skies, and continue contemplating the vast and wondrous universe. I'm your co-host, Chris. James, take us out, my friend.
I wish you all a fantastic dram. Enjoy your sips and enjoy the tips on life that make life more enjoyable for you. Have a fabulous rest of your day, and definitely we'll see you next time on the Whiskey and Widgets.
Believe.